I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. During last month's State of Downtown address, Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer seized the opportunity to announce his love for the city he's governed since 2003. Dyer is a Central Florida native, born in Orlando, raised in Kissimmee. Today, he's the chief executive of a city that's among the state's most dynamic, but also among the worst hit by the recession. He faces high unemployment, a brand new high-tech arena now left vacant by the NBA lockout. High-speed rail has been derailed for the region, but construction is poised to begin on a new region-wide commuter rail system. Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer on the state of the city, ahead on Intersection. And I'm joined by Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer. Sir, great to have you here.
Thank you, Mark. I'm pleased to be here.
You describe yourself as a mayor of the next great American city. Tell me about that vision for Orlando. And do you see Orlando as competing with other great cities like Boston, Austin, San Francisco?
Absolutely, I do. And I think as a region, we've grown up in the last decade and a half or so that we recognize we're not competing against each other. It's not Seminole County against Orange County or even Orlando against Tampa. We're thinking regionally and we're thinking about competing against Singapore and Stockholm and areas like that.
Well, how do you make Orlando into the next great city? What are we lacking?
I don't think we're lacking anything. I think that we're a city that people want to move to, that they want to be at. You talked about our campaign to recognize how much people love the city of Orlando. We are ranked as one of the 20 most lovable cities in America, and I ask people all the time, were you born here? Not that many were, so they moved here for opportunity of one way or another, either educational or job opportunity. But the second question I'll ask them is, well, how do you like it? And I love Orlando just all the time. So I think we're on our way there. I happen to subscribe to the economic theories of a guy named Richard Florida, who wrote the book on the rise of the creative class, and there are several other economists that suggest that if you're the community, the city that can attract the bright creative people, you're going to be the city that's successful in the future.
And at the same time, though, Richard Florida talked about this area along with Tampa and Miami forming a triangle super region for the state of Florida. Part of the magic that was supposed to connect all of that, high-speed rail, is now off the table. Do you think it's still possible for Orlando to form one of those pillars of a super region for this state?
Well, I think we're already connected to Tampa. That would have cemented it even more, the high-speed rail. And that's probably the biggest disappointment that I've had since I've been mayor was the governor killing the high-speed rail project. But other things are happening in terms of connectivity. Commuter rail, we're going to have the spine of a great commuter rail system that will eventually expand. We're looking at Kaiba Parkway and all types of other connections. But in those terms, in wanting to attract the type of people, you want a sustainable city, a walkable city, a place that's desirable to live.
What is it going to take, though, to push Orlando to that next level?
Doing exactly what we're doing, which is diversifying our economy. We have recognized that creating industry clusters is important and looking forward to what is the next generation of jobs. But take areas like the medical city. There's nowhere in America that is growing something like we are in the southeast part of the city, where you have UCS New Medical School, their life sciences school, the Sanford Burnham Research Institute. Those entities are already up and running, and the VA hospital and the Nemours Children's Hospital will come online next summer, and then the University of Florida Research Institute. So eventually there'll be 30,000 jobs involved with the medical city and $8 billion in economic activity on an annual basis.
You mentioned those clusters being spread out around the city. You've got them in different pockets of those areas. And of course, one of the issues that Central Florida deals with is sprawling out into different areas and regions. Do you think as we do that, we're getting bigger? Is bigger necessarily better?
Absolutely not. We, as a region, you probably remember back, although you're fairly young, when we were attempting to do light rail, and that also got derailed. But as a region, we came together and started an effort with my region organization to look at how shall we grow. And as a region, we have determined that we want to be more transit-oriented, so more, along with that, transit-oriented development. So we talked about that occurring when SunRail came, and we're already seeing the result of that. We've been able to announce two major developments that will occur in the downtown area. Both of the hospitals have announced major redevelopment, and then all up and down the line. So we want to be denser and more compact.
At the same time as that's going on, that vision for how to proceed forward, created during better economic times, now it's seeming like, especially when you have big developments that want to happen, something like Creative Village, for example, that's going to be a 30-year or longer incremental process. Does that worry you? Because in that long time frame, there's room for all kinds of stuff to happen that could derail those plans.
Well, the one thing that I've learned, some of these big vision issues, sometimes they take a long time to get done.
And you're thinking of SunRail, I imagine.
I'm thinking of SunRail as one of those. If think about SunRail, we had in the course of that project or getting it done, getting it to groundbreaking, we had three different governors, we had three different FDOT secretaries, two different presidents, two different FTA administrators, three different USDOT secretaries, two county mayors, and a partridge in a pear tree. But you got to have some continuity of leadership and some staying power to get some of these things done. But in terms of Creative Village, that's something that is a fairly massive undertaking. That's 70 acres to be redeveloped in the heart of downtown. So it is going to take, I don't know if it's going to take three decades, but I certainly would say 10 to 15 years.
We're talking with Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer about where Orlando is headed. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. Where do you think Orlando should be headed next? You can join our conversation on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages, and this is 90.7. You mentioned diversifying Florida's economy. There are areas like biotechnology, simulation, aviation that are coming into this region. What's left to do in those areas now that the ball is sort of rolling?
Well, we need to build off the existing industries that we have. So the other clusters are modeling, simulation, and training. We're probably the best in the world in terms of that cluster. And people don't recognize it as a cluster, but we have a theme park cluster, which is also the best in the world. So the type of people that can work in those industries also work in digital media. That's one of the areas. And the biotech that you mentioned, laser technologies, a cluster around UCF. So just continuing to build on the existing, to build to our strength is what we need to do. We don't need to go out and say, okay, we need a bunch of factories here. We need to build off our strength.
You mentioned that theme park cluster, which, of course, is an attraction from a global audience. But in the tourism sector, many of those jobs are low wage. I wonder, is there something that you as the mayor feel you can do to raise all those boats with some sort of tide economically to improve their situation?
Well, on the tourism industry, we have led the state in job creation and are projected to, and it's in large part because of the tourism community. And some of the jobs are certainly low wage or lower wage, let's say it that way. But you're better off to have a job than to not have a job. We had 52 million visitors last year, most in the history of any community in America. So that will continue to be one of the strong pieces of our economy.
I wonder, I mean, obviously you can't tell a corporation how to run their business, but are there cards you can play as the mayor to improve that quality of life for those workers in the service industry?
Well, we can lead by example. Some of the policies that we set, and this leads back to the creative class, in terms of tolerance, and then we've extended domestic partner benefits to our employees. Most of the industry, hospitality industry, has done similar things. So leading by example in terms of how we treat our employees is probably one of the ways we can do it.
You, of course, as the mayor, are guarding the vision of how people perceive Orlando. And right now there's a discussion in the state about expanding casino gambling, especially in South Florida. We know Walt Disney, the company, is strongly opposed to that, worrying about tarnishing a family-friendly image in Central Florida. What's your feeling on that issue as it
goes
on?
You just pretty much stated my position. I've had that issue before me a few times. I was in the Senate for 10 years, and casino gambling ideas have been around for a long time. And as I mentioned, we had 52 million visitors last year, so we're doing something right in terms of attracting visitors here, so I don't think that we want to tarnish the image that we have created. And, you know, maybe casino gambling would work, but there's a lot of things that, ancillary things that come along with that. And then the other issue that I would really worry about is a lot of times, even though the revenue, the tax revenue is generated in a certain area, it ends up going to Tallahassee and it's not dispersed fairly back to the communities that have generated it.
Do you think you could see casinos moving closer to Orlando? And what would you do to make some of that money come back into the communities?
Well, I'm going to continue the position that I'm against casinos on a statewide basis. If it ends up that they're in Broward County and Miami-Dade County, I'll shy away from telling them how they need to operate and where they need to place them. You probably recall we had a senator from Lakeland that wanted to tell us how we should run our commuter rail train, so I didn't really like people from outside our area telling us what we ought to do, so I probably won't be telling them what they need to do.
And for our listeners maybe wondering who that was, I think you're referring to Paula Dockery.
Yes, I was.
Mayor Dyer, you know, you mentioned up in Tallahassee, we've got a legislative session starting in January. What are you going to be looking for out of Tallahassee when that session starts up?
Well, I'm on defense probably more than offense. We don't have a lot of big things that we're pushing for. We would like not to have any revisions to the red light legislation that was passed. Let's see, the casino gambling bills, there's one that wants to ban it and one that wants to push it, so we'll be on the ban side of that, but we don't have a whole lot of issues that we have before the legislature this year.
You mentioned, of course, the global vision that Orlando projects into the world, and of course, there's been a lot of news about Brazil lately. Governor Rick Scott traveled there recently. The Brazilian airline TAM flies between Orlando and Sao Paulo. What do you describe as the relationship with countries like Brazil that are in kind of the region looking at Florida as a destination, and what's your role on that international stage?
Well, actually, I had a role in bringing TAM here. One of the economic development missions that I went on was to Sao Paulo and visited with TAM. Not to say that GOA hadn't been working on that relationship for probably a decade, but the trip that I took culminated in them deciding to launch that direct flight, and they subsequently expanded it to two, and now they're adding, going to go ahead and add a third. And, you know, Brazilian tourists spend about twice what most international tourists spend. So they are a very good partner to have here in the community. And then as the world expands or the economic pie expands, we really have to be looking beyond our borders in terms of trading partners and how we approach bringing the world to Orlando. So the mayor does have a role in making sure that we open up international business sectors.
Are you worried that maybe more tourists stay farther south of downtown than you'd like?
No, I think downtown is becoming a tourism destination as well. I convinced the tourism community, well, I shouldn't say that. The tourism community has been extremely supportive of what we are doing in remaking our downtown and the community venues. And in fact, the tourism community led by Disney and Universal and SeaWorld were supportive of raising the tourist development tax by a penny, that's 6 cents, which allowed us to move forward with the Amway Center and the Performing Arts Center.
In downtown, we've had the Occupy Orlando camp out at Beth Johnson Park since October 15th. They've gone through a couple marches through downtown, and recently I understand there was some meat found on Orlando City Hall. You know, what do you think about this Occupy Orlando movement?
Well, their core message, or at least Occupy Wall Street's core message, that we left the financial institutions unregulated and unaccountable, and they took advantage in the last decade. I actually agree with that. It's hard, however, to discern exactly what the message is from our Occupy Orlando group, other than they want to sleep in Beth Johnson Park. I did get that message, which we can't allow them to do. But I support any group's First Amendment right to both speech and to assemble, whether it's the Tea Party folks, whether it's the Occupy folks. We let the allow and protect the Ku Klux Klan when they come to march in Orlando.
Does it become more of an issue for you, though, the longer this goes on, the longer they stay out in the park? Does it make you have to focus more attention on what they're talking about?
Well, again, it's hard to discern exactly what they're talking about. They're out there. And again, I know the one core message, but there's so many ancillary messages. We do have to divert a lot of resources, patrol officers that should be patrolling neighborhoods or making sure that they're protected and that the surrounding neighborhoods are protected and that everything's orderly. But I got to say, 95% of the Occupy folks want to demonstrate peacefully and are out there for good purpose. We have a few agitators that, get in the police officers' faces and things like that. But OPD's done a really good job of controlling the situation.
There have been recent reports about other mayors around the country, of course, having to deal with larger Occupy movements and that exact issue of people coming in, infiltrating, taking advantage of that crowd that's there to cause whatever mischief they want to. Is that a concern for you?
It is, and we have a pretty good monitor on the situation. They like to refer to themselves as a leaderless group, so that makes it a little bit more difficult when you don't have someone in charge of the group, so you don't know if you're dealing specifically with the group as a whole or not. We made some arrests of people that wanted to be arrested and violated the park closure rules, and when I took a look at where they were from, less than a third of them were actually from Orlando.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're talking with Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer. I'm Mark Simpson. Do you think Orlando is on the right track? Tell us about it, Facebook and Twitter, or send an email over to intersection@WMFE.org. It's been about a year since the high-tech $480 million Amway Center has opened, but the arena has recently been left vacant by the NBA lockout that's going on. What's been the impact so far for the city?
Well, not vacant. We still have other events going on. No NBA events.
No NBA games.
Well, certainly the people that I'm most concerned about is we have over 500 concession hourly workers, security workers, ticket takers, ushers, and they get paid when they're there working. So there's potentially 45 nights that's taken out of their paychecks. And then the businesses along Church Street and South Downtown that have business plans that also assume at least 45 NBA nights. And several of those businesses, a lot of them either A, hung on for the couple of years while we were building the Amway Center and were hopeful just to make it to opening day. And then there were others that in the 6 months leading up to the opening of the Amway Center or shortly thereafter invested substantially in their businesses. And I just hope they can make it through. And I also hope that the owners and the players take into consideration some of those type of people other than just themselves, because the NBA players make on average $2 million a year. They'll be okay when they eventually reach a compromise, and the owners are certainly going to be okay, but I'm not sure all these small businesses are going to be okay.
Are you worried about any kind of revenue that would be generated that could actually go into city coffers, though? Is that an issue?
No. It's an odd thing, but we're actually better off if they don't play. We built
Why
into the lease agreement that they have to pay us whether they play or not. So they do an annual almost $3 million payment to the city, so they still have to stroke that check. So if we don't have to operate the building for their games, then we actually net out a little better. But that isn't the situation we actually want. We just protected ourselves financially.
Are you concerned about the perception, though, if the lockout continues for a while, that the Orlando Magic audience disperses elsewhere?
I'm not as concerned as the Magic and the NBA ought to be concerned about that. And, there are a lot of people that aren't necessarily NBA fans. They're hometown Orlando Magic fans. And if they go a whole season without basketball and realize, wow, I can spend my entertainment dollar on something else, I'm not sure you get them all back. And then, of course, another big concern for us is we have the NBA All-Star Game in February, and that's a $80 to $100 million economic impact for the city of Orlando, and we certainly don't want to miss out on that.
One of your major initiatives has been helping out the neighborhood of Paramore in the city of Orlando, and that old Amway arena, which is the site of the proposed Creative Village, would butt up right against the Paramore neighborhood and go into parts of it. What's the impact you think that might have on Paramore, and what else are you trying to pursue in that area?
Well, that will have a very positive impact on Paramore. You don't have an opportunity very often to redevelop 70 acres in the heart of your downtown area. So we have been very careful. We've studied and planned for about 6 years now on how we want to develop that. You mentioned the old arena that's there. We're actually going to begin demolition on the arena in December of this year. And it won't be a big explosion like the old City Hall. This one we're going to take down in a sustainable green fashion. We're going to take all the metal materials that you can recycle out, sell them, recycle them, and give the proceeds to the Knapp Ford Community School. And then we will crush the remainder of the building into grapefruit-sized concrete balls. And the floor of the Amway Arena is actually about 10 feet below grade, so we'll drop all of that concrete into that cavity and then cover it up and have those materials as we redevelop the roads and the infrastructure there. We'll use that as part of the new construction.
Do you think that the Creative Village, though, is going to bring jobs for residents of Paramore?
Yeah, absolutely.
The kind of high-tech jobs, though, that are predicted there?
Yeah, absolutely. The first components that are going to go in, we're going to straighten Livingston. You know, right now it goes around in a curve of the parking lot, so we'll straighten Livingston out. Phase one of the Creative Village will be south of Livingston, where the School of Emerging Media and FIA already is, the old Expo Center. And it will be an academic building, a joint-use building that will house both Valencia and UCF, as well as University of Florida is going to have some components there. So having the academic base there is important. And then you probably don't know this, but the first residential piece over there is going to be senior housing. So I would anticipate that there will be many seniors from Paramore that end up in some pretty nice senior housing as part of the Creative Village, and it's going to be a nice mix.
You mentioned, of course, one of the three jewels there for the city of Orlando, these new venues, the new Amway Center, the Performing Arts Center, and renovations to the Citrus Bowl. A couple months back, though, the Performing Arts Center got kind of a shaking from Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs. She had a negative reaction to the center's financing plans, and that seemed to catch the city off guard. There, of course, has been a revised plan to oversee construction, a new board. How did you manage to move ahead on that project? And, you know, are you happy with the status of it today?
Given the financial circumstances and the decline in the tourist development tax, I'm very pleased with an effort that's been going on for ongoing for 25 years, that we were able to begin construction with a very financially sound plan. We had about $40 million in anticipated TDT growth over the course of the 3 years of construction. So that's built into the finance plan. But we said, what if that TDT doesn't materialize? We don't want to start construction if we don't have a plan that we could complete the construction, even if the TDT didn't come in. And the DPAC board members stepped up and guaranteed a line of credit at no expense to the city that allowed us to do that. And you probably saw last week that with the Expedia settlement
on the hotel tax
that we generated an extra $8 million that is going to help take them off the hook on that line of credit.
But is it correct that Mayor Jacobs' reaction took you off guard?
I was surprised by that. I'm used to working a little bit differently, where you work collegially and don't surprise your partners.
So what is that relationship like now with Mayor Jacobs?
I'd say it's cordial, professional.
And what do you think moving forward, is there something on your side that you might be able to do to bring it closer together? Or, you know, is this just, are there political issues involved, financial outlook issues involved? Why so cordial when you have to obviously work so closely with your neighbor?
Well, I think cordial is a good word.
I guess, but why not more warmly, I suppose?
Well, you have to recognize that we have we're a region that is has come together and been able to collaborate and partner, and that's why we've been successful with the Medical City, with Sunrail, with the venues. And those partnering and collaborating aren't easy. It's easier just to do something by yourself, but I think we all, Mayor Jacobs, myself, Seminole, Osceola County commissions, recognize that we have to work every day through whatever differences we have or difficulties that we have and put the best interests of our region ahead of our individual interests.
Were things easier under Mayor Crotty?
I've known Mayor Crotty longer, so we've probably had a stronger personal relationship. So I don't know if I would say they were easier, but I just, you know, have known him longer.
I do want to ask you just briefly about Sunrail. Things are moving forward with that project. Of course, the groundbreaking is not totally underway at this point at the various stations. But I wonder, you know, what do you foresee as that project unfolds? Are you concerned about any potential hiccups along that path now that you've had such a bumpy road to get it to where it is today?
Well, I feel really good about where we are today. We were fourth and long many, many times, and we're able to, in football vernacular, to make that first down, and we're now at the goal line. We completed the purchase, the closing on the purchase of the right-of-way a couple of weeks ago, so we'll have a groundbreaking here before the end of the year, and I anticipate construction to go pretty smoothly. It's not a difficult construction project, quite honestly.
These tracks are already in existence.
Yeah, well, one track is. We're double tracking the length of the 61 miles, so that's what will be done. And then better signalization. There's going to be upgrades at all the crossings, and you got to remember this will be a two-car or three-car train that will quickly go through a crossing versus a coal train that takes 15 minutes or something to go through the intersection.
Understanding that you're working with existing conditions to get this project underway, started initially, a lot of people look at this route and say, hey, wouldn't it be great if it went out to UCF? And the obvious connection, there's no rail connection planned at the moment to the airport. What news or updates might you say on those areas?
The DOT is currently conducting an alternatives analysis on how we go east-west between the airport, Lake Nona, even out to UCF and out to I-Drive. The most obvious link, OUC, the City of Orlando, owns a coal line that goes from Taft out to the Stanton energy plant. So that's actually the route that high-speed rail was going to take, was in that same corridor. But that would connect directly to the airport and to Lake Nona from the airport from the south and Lake Nona from the north.
And I also just want to ask you, you are gearing up for an election run, and I know City Commissioner Phil Diamond also preparing for a run, could be looking at a potential primary. So does someone like Phil Diamond raise concerns for you politically as you look ahead?
You take every race seriously. There's a couple other candidates in as well. It's a nonpartisan race, so it's not Democratic primary or Republican primary, whether you're Republican or Democrat or independent. You're all in the first race, and hopefully I'll get 50% and won't need a runoff. But every 4 years, you have a chance to lay your ideas out and your record out, and your opponents get to do the same thing. But I feel like can present a pretty good case for reelection.
I've been speaking with Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer. Mayor, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida and Orlando continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.